Finally, now let's have a look at maybe a little bit amusing example of what the problems are that you as a parser engineer are likely to encounter in practice. So for that, I've chosen a particularly well-known language, which is ANSI C, which is like one of the earliest standards of C out there and considered to be like the least common denominator of all the different C dialects that have been out there earlier. So keep in mind that this is a very old language with a lot of old relics still in there, and the engineering of languages was still in its early phases. Yeah. So the most bothersome part in terms of developing Lexer and parser for ANSI C is the type diffs or type definitions. Yeah, what is that, you might ask? A type definition introduces a synonym for another type. Yeah. So concretely, what you do in ANSI C is you start your definition with this type def keyword, and then you are meant to specify a type expression like this one over here and terminate with an identifier like this one, which by this or after this instruction has been passed, you declare to be a type. And this identifier you can then use in places where you would or usually use a type. Thus, you define a type. Yeah. So what you can do with that is you make your code a lot more readable. For example, down there, declaration of a recursive C structure is like, for example, this one here with the struct that you also give a name like list. You define another struct list pointer in there, and you have this lengthy expression that you might want to abbreviate with your newly introduced identifier that serves as a type from now on. So you can, instead of struct list, you can just use this list t thing. Yeah. So this is what you usually do with that. So from a point of view of grammars and all that and parsing, what is a little bit odd about that is that for that to work, you need to express your grammar, of course, on particular tokens, and the tokens that are used in C for types contain, for example, this type name token that is meant to represent an identifier that has been declared as a type. Which, when you think a little bit long about that, means that there usually also is an identifier token, and from a lexical point of view, you would have a hard time of differentiating those two from each other because type names are simply introduced by providing an identifier, and thus a type name is nothing other than a thing that has formerly been an identifier, so they are literally identical in a certain sense. However, the grammar that sits on top of the lexical analyzer differentiates between those two concepts and expects the lexical analysis to provide the appropriate token at the appropriate position. For example, if you consider the declarations down there, where you introduce with your type def keyword a particular identifier point t as a certain type, so thus this should then be turned into a type name. And in the following instruction, where you immediately use that thing, point t, this should be reported by the lexical analysis as a type name instead of an identifier as it had been earlier on. Now that's interesting, because that is, in a certain sense, a context-sensitive property. Yeah? So, what are you expected to do? Well, the language specification provides you with a rough idea of what you should do. And in principle, what is proposed there is that the parser is meant to communicate to the scanner that some identifier is from some certain point of time on to be reported as a type name. Yeah, well, so with that, you got communication separate from the usual token provision that is about communicating identifiers with the scanner. Yeah. So what you do is, as soon as in a parser you encounter production that corresponds to whatever this thing corresponds to, so usually some kind of declaration, and if you find that in there you define a type with typedef, you usually then communicate the identifier found in the declaration to the lexer as a thing that has newly been introduced as a new type and should further on be reported as a type name. This is something that you can, in principle, do in a scanner. So the relevant C grammar for that is the one that you see down there. So it's about declarations that are usually split into the part of the declaration specifiers over there, which are things like keyword type or some type constructors like struct or these base types like int or void or character and all that. And those are also have usually the type name in there, because with the type name you can then declare a new type like it's done here. Yeah? And then there's the other part of the declaration, which is the declarator, which apart from a few other things carries the identifier. This would be like this part here or this part in the example. Yeah, and then finally the declaration gets terminated by the semicolon, which I accidentally marked for the identifier, but is a separate entity in the whole thing. So, what is the problem with that? Well, the thing is that usually these scanners and parsers set up in a way that whenever they communicate a particular token to the parser, they already continue consuming input in order to provide a look ahead symbol. Yeah, and this is done as soon as a particular token is consumed by the parser, which means as soon as you start reducing the right hand side here of the declaration, you of course consume all the, or have already shifted all the tokens, and thus you have consumed already the semicolon, which means that the scanner usually goes on and starts anew interpreting the remainder of the input for a new token, and will already have started in the example above here to interpret whatever it finds here. And that would be, well, as long as this thing has not will as soon as this is found on the push down, this will have been consumed already. So this is matched against the rules of the scanner, which usually say that, well, this is a pattern that might be an identifier or a type name. However, the parser has so far not communicated that point T is considered to be a type name from now on. So this will already be in our look-ahead window in form of an identifier token and has already been consumed from the input. Only then the whole thing is reduced and the action for the declaration reduction is call, and thus the declaration of point T as a type name comes too late. Yeah. So due to this eager provision of a new look-ahead token by the scanner, we miss a type name, instead wrongly identify that as an identifier, which means that we come to an identifier semicolon, which just doesn't have any correct meaning in ANSI C, and thus come to an error. Yeah. So you might wonder what you can then do. So there's several ideas for solving that puzzle. So for example, you could try to fix the look-ahead token class within the scanner parser channel or this look-ahead buffer or whatever the practical implementation of that has. Well, you might wonder whether that is a good idea. You could retrospectively try to patch that. However, you would have to be sure that the look-ahead has not actually really been used already for the reduction that has been done before. Otherwise, you might want to undo that. However, if that is the declaration, you undo the declaration that does the relabeling of the identifier to the type name. This, well, turns out to be quite the mess. Yeah. So this is maybe not what you want to do. Another way of fixing that could mean to, well, if you already are in this world of grammars and productions and all that, why do we really have to keep disambiguating between type name and identifier on the parser level already? We might just instead consider type name to derive into identifier. Yeah, so we could establish a new rule that says type name is an identifier, and maybe live with that. With that, we would then later on in the semantic analysis have to figure out whether what the actual which identifier really is a type name, for example. And well, you could think that that would work. However, consider for example this input of two bracketed identifiers or potential identifiers. What could that be? Now, is that if you interpret my type 1 as a type name, is that a cast expression now? Casting my type 2 to my type 1? Or might that rather be something like a method call of my type 1 with my type 2 both being identifiers? Yeah, so this there, if you modify your grammar, it turns out that in the way that we have sketched above with this type name goes to identifier, turns out that with that you would then usually have this type name here. Well, wait a minute, here, this type name here being now this new non-terminal type name, which would then be considered an identifier. And the postfix expression could also be expanded with a bracketed expression and then expand to an identifier. And in those cases, we would have, Well, an ambiguous grammar out of well, suddenly, and well, that's a bad thing because ambiguous grammars are things we can't retrospectively patch with like a semantic analysis in order to get to know what was meant. Instead, we have like two possible derivation trees that match that particular input. So, yeah, that also doesn't work. So, what can you really only do? Well, you can do practical hacks like the one from here. Remember this declaration being considered like declaration specifier collection and a declarator with a semicolon. The problem was that the reduction was happening after having consumed the semicolon with expecting something else in the look ahead. Yeah. What happens if we do a reduction a little bit earlier on so that our look ahead is, for example, like here, the semicolon? And you can do that in practical parser generators. There is possibilities to have inner actions, so they are called, so we can specify an action like this. So not at the end of a right-hand side, but somewhere in the middle. This is internally done by introducing like an artificial non-terminal n, where n goes to epsilon, and there in this you then do the actual action. Yeah, so this is what is internally done by that. This leads to these so-called interactions, and when this thing is reduced, the look ahead is still this semicolon, which is definitely not an identifier or type name. So it's safe to add the identifier found in the declarator part of this right-hand side to the list of identifiers that should act as type names and communicate that to the scanner before the actual declaration production is finally reduced. Yeah, so that is a thing that helps you here. But you have to resort to tricks like that in order to make NCC, which is considered to be, well, like a mainstream language, to be parsable with an automatic LR1 parser generator. Yeah? So that's practical problems that arise even for professional grade languages.